What's up, guys? Hope you're doing well. Cloud with you here today. I've got a lot to get through. It's one of those complicated ones. Really kind of the biggest theme in the book of Thessalonians. So let's just get into it. We're talking about the end times. This is one of the key verses of the whole book. So this is chapter 4, verses 13 through 18. But we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep. For this we declare to you, by a word of the Lord, that we who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a cry of command, with the voice of an archangel, and with the sound of a trumpet of God. And the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will always be with the Lord. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. First of all, let's just say, verse 13, what are some points? Let's just get into it. Paul wants us to be informed, right? And that's a good thing. So Paul, he's writing, we don't want you to be uninformed, because they were uninformed. And so they had some messed up beliefs and their actions were messed up as a result of that. It's not necessarily heresy as much as it is just plain old ignorance. And we say ignorance like, oh, he's ignorant. Like, it's almost like a dirty word, like an insult. And, you know, ignorant is not, it just means you don't know. Like, it's not always, sometimes you should know, right? So it's not good to be ignorant. But ignorant isn't always a dirty word. You think about this just with some grace, right? This is the church that has been with Paul for at best 3 weeks, right? And they're ignorant, right? That's to be expected, right? They didn't know, right? How much stuff did you not know when you first became a Christian? We're all still learning stuff. I think we'll still be learning stuff for eternity because God's infinite. So that aside, like, it's just that Paul's like, all right, I want you to be informed. So that's the first thing. And it's understandable, right? So, you don't know, now learn. And he goes into all this stuff. And so, what they were dealing with is there was kind of two camps in Thessalonica. One that said the end times were coming soon, and so let's just stop working. And then there's another one that said they might have missed out on it. And here, we see people that are worried that it's about to happen, but what about their relatives, the people who have already died physical deaths before the second coming? Like, are they going to miss out? Right. And so Paul wants us to be informed. And so when it comes to the end times, like the Thessalonians, right, we might not be, but the Thessalonians were worried that those who had already died would miss out on the resurrection. And so Paul's writing to them to inform them. And he says, all right, well, when people die, right, And in this text, he says they've fallen asleep. And so that's a euphemism, right? It means death, right? It's not literal sleep. But this doesn't also mean soul sleep either. I know that's a doctrine that some people teach, and it's not true. In the Bible, it says, you know, when we die, immediately the body dies, right? Physically, we know what happens there. We don't have to belabor that. But it says in the Bible in multiple places that the spirit goes on to be in the presence with God. You see this with the thief on the cross and many other places in the epistles, that absent from the body with the Lord, right? So the body dies, and Paul is being nice, and he's using a euphemism for that, and it's saying it's sleep. That's to comfort these Thessalonians who are worried about people that may have missed the bus due to physical death, that they will miss out on the second coming. And so likewise, when we die, right, our body dies and decays, but our spirit either goes on to be with the Lord or goes on to be in Hades or Sheol, whatever word you want to use, hell, that we would call it now. So it's not like we just cease to exist or have a soul nap. And so that's not what Paul is talking about. What Paul is talking about is sleep as a euphemism for, yeah, you're dying, but he's using that word to note that it's going to be like sleep, right? It's only temporary. We'll eventually wake up. And so I know that's complicated, but like the body, here's the ultimate, like we need to have hope. And Paul wants them to have hope. So he wants us to be informed, and that information should lead us to have hope. And that's why he goes on to verse 14 and he says, "For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again." That's the basis of our hope, is the fact of the bodily death and bodily resurrection of Jesus. It's based on that fact. That's the reason we can have hope. Because when these Thessalonians' relatives are dead, and Paul says, oh, they're asleep, they'll eventually rise, they'll be resurrected, he's basing on that on the fact, and he says, Jesus died. And if you notice, it doesn't say Jesus sleeps. Jesus died. He's choosing not to use the euphemism there. He's choosing to use the word died. Right? It means the same thing, like they died physical death. Jesus died a physical death. And the surety of that, the power and the penalty of sin, the wrath that was poured out from the Father on the Son on the cross. Like, that's why Paul chooses to use the word died instead of sleep. And so we have the basis on the fact that Jesus died, his body was broken, put in a tomb, and then he rose again. It wasn't just his soul that rose again or his spirit that rose again. It was his whole body. People saw him eat and get up and walk around and talk to people. It was a physical body. And so the hope that we have, Paul wants us to be informed, he wants us to have hope, is that ultimately we will be called up to a reunion of body and spirit. That's the resurrection. That's what's involved in the second coming. Like, at the bottom line, right, we'll be called up to a reunion of both body and spirit. And so this is in the text where we get into this word called eschatology. Now, if you've been at New Vision for a long time, you've probably heard that talked about. I think we talked a little bit about it when we went over the book of the first part of Revelation. And I always say this, it's always, I think it's wrong with me, but I just don't like eschatology, right? I like the Bible and theology, and I know it's important, and I shouldn't feel that way. I think it's probably more accurate to say that I don't like getting super into eschatology, right? Everybody cares about the end times, and we all should. That's actually the biggest thesis of the book, is the end times, the second coming of Jesus is what motivates us. But I don't like the whole debate stuff and all the different, I mean, I understand all that. I just don't, I really, it's not one of my biggest things to get into. I think there's other theological concepts or have more information to talk about. But that besides the point, we see in verses 16 through 18, one of another hotly debated theological points that deals with eschatology, the study of end times. And so this is the podcast. It's a little bit deeper than some of the things we have time to get to on Sundays. And so this podcast is going to go long, because I'll pause and talk a little bit about those things here that are involved here in verses 16 through 18. So here's kind of the issue, right? You've heard of the word rapture before, right? I'm assuming most of you have. We've called this sermon series Called Up. And really, the word rapture, it's a relatively new word. In fact, it's actually that specific word itself. It didn't come into prominence until actually the 19th century. So you're talking the 1800s. But it came from the English translation, or the English paraphrase of the Vulgate. So the Vulgate is the Latin translation of the Greek New Testament. So we're talking about a word that sounds like the second translation here. And it's Latin for the word that is in Greek that means caught up or called up or torn away. And that's what we translate in our English Bibles, is in verse 17. Then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. So this idea of being called up, caught away, ripped out, like that terminology, it's literally what it means in Greek, was translated, I can't even pronounce it, but in Latin it's like rapturo or something, and it sounds like rapture, and that's what they said in English. And so this is a relatively new word to describe what's always been the case, this rapture, and we'll just say the word rapture, right? And that can depend multiple things based on what you mean by that, but we'll use that word just in a general sense. And so the word rapture came around to be used more frequently in the 1800s with the rise of dispensational theology. We don't have enough time to get into that, but all this eschatology, the end time stuff, has so many different ideas that lead to other resolutions, and it's like this affects that, and so it's just a very complicated debate. because it deals with not only the rapture, but it also deals with the millennium, which you see in Revelation 20 verses 1 through 6. People's opinion of that, does the millennial reign happen? Is it literal? Is it on earth or not? Or is it figurative? Is this before or after the second coming? And so that's where we get this debate of premillennialism and postmillennialism, right? And then you have, I mentioned dispensational theology earlier. That's the relationship, basically, people debate, what's the relationship between the capital C church and Old Testament Israel? Some people make a bigger distinction than others. Some people say that the capital C church is spiritual Israel, right? And so that's covenantalism versus dispensationalism. It's complicated, right? I'm just using these words. You can look them up for yourself. So we have the millennium. We have the relationship of the church and Israel, what happens to them at the end time. Then we have the idea of the tribulation, which is what the rapture here in verses 16 through 17 is mostly dealing with. And so there's a multitude of positions on this as well. There's something called pre-trib theology or pre-tribulation. Right? I'm a pre-trib guy, or I'm a post-trib guy. And that's what that's referring to, is what do you mean by the word rapture? So some people think that there's a secret, I'm using air quotes, but a secret rapture that will happen before the Great Tribulation and before the Second Coming. You've probably seen this on the Left Behind movies or in the books, and you know that you've probably seen people just disappear and leave a pile of clothes. And so that kind of refers to this pre-tribulation theology. Other people disagree with that. Other people are post-trib people, and they say that the rapture, or the being called away of the church, will happen after part of or all of the tribulation. And there's a multitude of beliefs that fill in all the gaps and cover all those different areas. And so I know I'm throwing out big words and it's very complicated. At the end of the day, right, I have a one that I lean towards, but I'm just not sure, because we won't know until it happens for sure. And so that's something that we need to remember, because during the Old Testament times, Israel had all sorts of prophecy predicting the first coming of Jesus, the Christmas story, right? Jesus coming. And we have all this stuff written in Revelation as symbolism. It's like, what do you mean by that? What's your opinion of this? Like, we have all this eschatology and prophecy about the second coming. And, you know, just like Israel got it wrong and missed the Messiah, so too might we in our New Testament times, being well-informed though we are, have maybe an incomplete view of what will happen until it actually occurs. And so we won't know till it happens, right? But at the end of the day, whether you're pre-trib or post-trib or premillennial or post-millennial, or you're dispensational, or you're into covenant theology, at the end of the day, Paul wants us to know, he doesn't get into all that. He says, therefore, encourage one another with these words. And so, blah, 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 I've gone really long today. At the end of the day, the expectation of the end times, the second coming, is meant to lead us to encouragement. So study this as much as you want. Form your own opinion. You think you're a post-trib guy, historic premillennial, whatever. That sounds great. But at the end of the day, when you go through stuff in life, you need to be encouraged to know, whatever way it goes down, that Jesus is coming again and we will be with him forever. We can have hope in the reunion we'll have when our dead body is resurrected with our spirit and we're in the new heavens and the new earth with Jesus forever. So, hope this has helped you guys. Continue in the First Thessalonians study, and we'll see you on the next episode.